what we really were talking about was to not only look ahead as far as we could possibly see into the future and anticipate what might be some challenges that we should face, but two things happened which really helped me understand. The first, I came to realize and appreciate as I studied history a little myself that over the last 75 years, we'd seen this magnificent restoration of our natural resources in our state on the same landscape at the same time that our human population had doubled. And we hosted last summer a Teaming with Wildlife meeting for a variety of organizations that are our partners. And we invited to speak the former agency director from Georgia, Dave Waller. And Dave said to me, our state is very much like Missouri, about the same size, very much the same outdoor sort of culture, but we have twice as many people as you have, and there are many things that we wish we would have done long ago to prepare for what we have to deal with now that would have been easier then. And so that sort of got us thinking about this.
It's also 75 years almost since the original Conservation Department was set up, so that's a good time to take a look ahead.
Yep.
Did you try to lay out any kind of a vision for what Missouri was going to look like in 75 years and what it would need?
We did. We invited Dr. Larry Brown from the University of Missouri, a renowned geographer and cultural social geographer, to give us some ideas and some analyses. That was a part of this, but also a part of it was to really compare what has changed historically and see if we could anticipate in the future what other extensions might come from those things that we've done in the past.
And I guess there was enough there that you decided this was a matter of concern, so you better get with it right now.
Absolutely. I don't think any of us at the Conservation Federation believe that that the challenges for natural resources will be less in the future. I think we all recognize that it's going to require a significant investment of time and resources to enjoy the quality of life that we have now in the future when we have more people and more demands on our landscape. It seems that every year there are things like urban sprawl or various local ordinances that come into being or things that have a dramatic effect or can and will have a dramatic effect on our state in the long term. But in the short term, maybe we don't recognize quite the consequences. But things are changing constantly, and we thought rather than be complacent about the wonderful state that we live in and the wonderful state of natural resources at the present time, we better be looking ahead to make sure that we can continue that.
All right, that's the number one priority that you folks listed at the end of it was teaching Missourians about the outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
Most people just take the outdoors for granted and assume that during their lifetime they'll always have it. So how do you did you get into how you make people care?
We did talk about this in each of the breakout sessions that we had the second day, and there are many dimensions to this. On a personal note, before I came here, I worked for the National Wild Turkey Federation, and when I began my service there in 1993, it was a very small organization, and at the same time, in 1993, the wild turkey was fully restored in our state. So the question was that we had to have the answer to is, why do we need such an organization, and what role does it play? Those answers, formulating those answers ourselves in our own mind, are the first step for us to look ahead and to be able to provide that answer to those who come after us in the future. A big word that we heard a lot, Bob, was relevance. What will be the relevance of the outdoors to people in the future? You know, one of the framing or defining qualities of our day is that a study just came out recently, a nationwide study that revealed that only 30 minutes a week are spent outdoors by the average young person in the United States right now. And 30 minutes a week is a whole lot less than I did when I was a kid. And what does that mean? Well, to me, the real telling interpretation of that is that if 30 minutes is average, that means there's just an awful lot of young people that never get outside. And so the relevance, what could the out of doors have to do with the quality of life of a young person who's never outside? Dr. Kellert's speech was intended to address that directly. Our first speaker after Governor Nixon was a Yale professor that looks at the absolute internal connection between each and every one of us and nature and the outdoors. Not only our quality of life, but our health, mental, physical, spiritual, you name it, is dependent upon us having a first-hand relationship with the outdoors. So, again, to get a long way around the block here, that to all of us underscores that this is something that is important to everyone, and it isn't going to happen or isn't going to continue in the quality that we have now unless we take some serious actions.
Well, you can ban all computer games. That'll get them outside.
yeah. There's a lot of ways to skin a cat. You know, we Missourians are accustomed to compromise and dealing with people of different opinions. And one of my closing remarks that I so am sad that you missed because I was thinking of you when I said it, and this was about us Missourians, that we're very much like our state symbol, the Missouri mule. We're stubborn enough, you can't make us do anything, but we can be drawn into anything we think's worthwhile. And that's the part that we as citizens get to do. We get to sell the rest of our people on the relevance of this, the importance of this, and I'm convinced that when people appreciate the value of this in a broad sense, and virtually everyone there did, of course, that we can make some real progress on this.
The number two priority is really kind of the number one issue in terms of survival, and that's clean, abundant groundwater. Without water,
absolutely,
Nothing's going to happen.
Absolutely. You know, when I was part of the Citizens Committee for the renewal of the Parks and Soils Tax a couple of years ago, I mean, you talk about a constant. When we did the surveys to frame our campaign beforehand, 96.5% of our people, urban, suburban, rural, everybody realizes the importance of and the value of clean water. And that's something we're blessed with in our state and have good and abundant resources, but it's, again, something that's going to increasingly require our stewardship of in the future. And that was a really high marks, top natural resource priority of everyone there. And, you know, that surprised some people that come there with very specific interests. And but there's a lot of commonality that we found there at this summit that I think was good for all of us to see.
My wife, who retired from the DNR Hazardous Waste Program, was forever going out running well tests and finding mm-hmm. that wells had gotten increasingly contaminated and groundwater had gotten increasingly contaminated because of our modern society, our modern
yep.
industry, our modern business practices and things
yep.
like that. And I guess this is something that's really of a concern to you folks.
It is. And, you know, if I may, back before this Parks and Soils renewal came up, I was becoming more and more of a student of hydrology in the Ozarks and in the Branson area in particular. I had no idea that at that time, some years ago, with that enormous population of people that show up every summer, and then they used to leave in the wintertime, and now there's more of them around in the winter, too. But it used to go, the water table used to go down as much as 800 feet each year and then cycle back up when people left in the wintertime. Well, that cycling isn't occurring as readily anymore. And it's, so the water table's going down and down, and it's not rebounding. And so for the first time, we're anticipating in Missouri that we're really going to have to face some serious water quantity issues that we've never had before. And that's just the first example of it. But you could see, too, Bob, if you looked at the list of participants, that there were four really outstanding private citizens water groups from down in southwest Missouri represented at the summit. These folks are already organized and thinking about these things, and it's important to them already, just as it's important to all of us, but they certainly recognize it.
Yeah, the Tri-State Water Consortium or something down
there. That's one. Yeah. There's Ozark Waterways. There's Upper James River Water Basin, something or other. And I can't ever keep them all straight, but there are four such organizations that are very prominent and very active down there.
Yeah, I got a thing today that, or maybe it was in the Joplin paper today, that there's going to be a public meeting next month on a report that recommends three locations for major impoundments of water in southwest Missouri.
Wow.
So that's an interesting thing we'll have to watch.
Yeah.
Okay, you talk about connecting families and communities to nature. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that kind of plug back into the first point about teaching Missouri?
It does. In my mind, it does. You know, Bob, one of the other things that I said in my concluding remarks is, we can talk about the issues of the day or of the near future, within the next election cycle or the next year or something. And a lot of the things that we talked about had dimensions that certainly are included in the very near future. But what we really must do, the one thing that we absolutely have to do, is to prepare those who will follow us. We have a culture of excellence here in how governance is delivered and how natural resource stewardship occurs. And if we don't do an adequate job of preparing those who will come after us to do things and to learn from the mistakes that we've made, then, of course, history will be destined to repeat itself, and we'll have something less than we would otherwise. So if you look at each of these 10 in that way, you'll see very quickly that each of those really is contingent upon us doing a good job of maintaining this culture of citizen conservation that we have and helping those that come after us to understand how to do their job. I went over to the Quail Academy today over at Warrensburg and spoke with young people about that. I can tell you, when you express it in that way, they understand pretty quickly, and they get pretty excited as youngsters about having a real role in the decision making about what their future will be like, because they already value the same things that we value, but may not appreciate, as you and I have sat in an awful lot of Senate hearings and debates, what a lengthy process and what a great commitment that requires to effect such change.
I thought the fourth, fifth, and sixth things that you folks voted on are very much related, very close. Supporting and funding outdoor resources and activities, conserving plants, animals, and habitats, and assuring public lands for outdoor use. Mm-hmm. Those are all pretty much interlinked, aren't they?
They are indeed. In my opinion, these are all just dimensions of the same central challenge. And Governor Nixon said it very well. This is a different summit than we had 75 years ago. And when we came together 75 years ago, we had to restore before we could conserve. Now, restoration and to a certain extent conservation are successful. What we have a challenge to do is to pass on this culture of understanding, appreciating, and ensuring these things, and then helping enough of our society, I'd like for everyone to value it, but have enough of our society find it relevant and important enough that it'll continue. I believe it will. Dr. Brown talked about in his remarks that he really believed that we would see a growing engagement in the outdoors of our citizenry in the years ahead. In his estimation, this would be based upon the likely scenario that more and more people are moving out of suburban areas out into rural areas, into these ranchettes and other places like that where they're more connected with nature, and that that will, along with it, bring better understanding and appreciation of the outdoors. And it's an intriguing consideration. I hadn't really thought of that in quite that way, but there may be something to that.
Okay, you talk about helping private landowners, and that kind of gets back to what you were just talking about. But there's always been, in my experience in watching the development of conservation efforts in Missouri over a long time, there's always been a friction between the private landowner who thinks that the conservationists want to come in and run the land.
Yep, government's going to come and tell me what to do.
Yeah, and so how do you get beyond that? How do you resolve that by helping private landowners?
That is an excellent question, and that's one that's very important to me. My family are landowners. I own a farm up in Clark County, in the northeast corner of the state, about as rural as you can get. And I understand absolutely this mindset that you describe. On the other hand, these are the same folks that take a great amount of pride in the wildlife that's on their property. Surveys reveal a quite different picture than what you sometimes hear bantied around the Capitol as being a reality, where, you know, landowners are up in arms about having deer on their property or whatever they may say. There's a lot of pride and ownership in wildlife in our state. One of my favorite essays was written by Aldo Leopold in 1938, when the now Thomas Basket area was first acquired by the University of Missouri up at Ashland. At that dedication, he talked about he expressed it in this way. He said that he could never imagine a day in the distant future when more than one-fifth of our Missouri landscape would be in public ownership. And, of course, you know, it's far short of that now. It's 7%, it's 7% as opposed to one-fifth is in public ownership today. And he said that even in that day, when one-fifth of it's in public ownership, how could the conservation needs of five-fifths of our people be met on one-fifth of the landscape? And then he went on to say further that until landowners had as much pride in their flock of prairie chickens or in their flock of quail or wild turkeys as they did in their own livestock, conservation wouldn't have arrived. Well, to get back to Dr. Brown's remarks, there are a number of landowners now, recreational landowners, if you will, or hobby farmers, if you will, that have a significant value for wildlife resources on their property, and it's a consideration in their management. That's an encouragement. But even the large-scale production agriculture folks, an awful lot of them have increasing value of wildlife on their property. Look at deer leasing fees in North Missouri, where I'm from, for example. That's a significant revenue stream. In fact, up in Kirksville, the Chamber of Commerce put out a video a couple of years ago, you may have seen or may not have, that they generate more sales tax revenue during the firearms deer season than they do during the entire holiday season in their town. So it has great economic value, and that is, to me, a starting point for the discussion with private landowners to find value in managing their property for wildlife.
Clean air. I mean, our air is already pretty clean right now.
Oh, yeah. Clean air is another one. Carbon sequestration. You know, there's all kinds of cap and trade stuff being proposed out there. There may be all kinds of economic incentives for landowners to manage their forests. I, for one, already believe that it's economically possible, and actually I wouldn't consider the 240 acres of forest that I own not being managed. We have a stewardship plan, and the growth rates and the health and the vitality of forest is much greater managed than it is when it's not. And so that's another role for the Conservation Federation and our many affiliates, is to help just be the flag wavers and the standard bearers for responsible stewardship of property, and we believe in that.
The last two are developing an organizational structure for leadership and then promoting stakeholder input. That's a case of you can't have good leaders if you don't have good followers, basically.
That's right. It sure is. And I'm thrilled with that stakeholder part. That's become a familiar word to all of us here in Jefferson City over the last few years. And all the hearings that the Department of Conservation has about deer regulation, or every proposed change that they have, that deer regulations are fresh in my mind, because we tracked that one with the permit fee discussion that occurred last year. There were 18,000 public comments on this that were offered by our citizens, and I think that's tremendous. And the same way with the Department of Natural Resources and the state parks and their care and governance, public hearings and discussions, all of these, we have so much more infrastructure now than we had in 1935. Infrastructure in terms of private citizens groups that are out there. You know, there were just precious few, other than maybe hunting and fishing clubs, that existed back then, and now they're know, there are master naturalist groups. There are still hunting and fishing groups. There are organizations around certain species, all kinds of things. The last time I checked was 2 years ago, and at that time, Bob, I could identify 642 different organizations that were here in Missouri that had to do with natural resource conservation. And I would bet that precious few of those existed before 1935. Probably only 10 or fewer would have existed back then. So that's an enormous resource of organizations that now exist that didn't exist then that give me cause for optimism for the future.
You know, one thing I notice as I look down this list of 10 priorities, although it is implied in a few of these places, the word government is never mentioned in mm-hmm. any of these 10 points.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this is citizen mm-hmm. Citizen participation and voluntary mm-hmm. Compliance or mm-hmm. agreements, right?
Mm-hmm. It is, and it's probably not intentional, but it's certainly not something that we avoid either. That would be that one of my predecessors here as executive director, a fellow named Charles Callison, who went on to become, after being executive director here, he became the conservation director of the National Wildlife Federation. Then he went on to become executive secretary of National Audubon. But he said it this way in 1948, the Conservation Federation of Missouri as an organization serves to discover, even to stimulate, to express, and translate to action the public will in matters affecting conservation. That expression of the public will, that's what limits the thinking and the performance of every agency. They are an expression of public will, as are we as a membership organization, but as a private citizenry, we have to figure out what that will is. And having this discussion at this time in this way, we wanted to set this up to transcend the limitations of any one agency or group of agencies. And quite frankly, as you recall, when we came together back in 1935, the agencies didn't exist. And so it was our obvious decision and action at that time to create those agencies to meet the need. And we feel like the agencies serve us well and serve the natural resources well in our state. And how will we continue this? How will we find support for them? How will we find support for the programs and the projects that need to be done to ensure bright future for it? How will we make it relevant to private landowners, or how will landowners be able to use this to as they consider the management of their property or how it's used? All those things, those are expressions of public will, and I look forward to being involved in this, and I think that everyone who was gathered here a couple of weeks ago looks at it in the same way. This is something they care a lot about, and they can put aside their own interests in the short term to try to make the lifestyle that we enjoy here in Missouri last for as far as we can see into the future.
Do you have any plans to try to draw these people back together in 5 years and say, how are we doing, or anything like that?
Well, you know, several people suggested, you know, this was such a good thing. Wouldn't it be great if we did this every year? And I said, no. First off, my staff and I and the committee, the program committee, we've been working on this for 3 years, and we don't. We don't want to just have this become another meeting for the sake of a meeting. This is a very special gathering, and we were blessed with participation of very special folks that came and partook of our activities. But I tell you what I do think we're going to do, and that is I think that each year we're going to expand our annual convention by one day and move it into it's now Friday evening and Saturday and Sunday. We're going to probably devote the day on Friday, and the board's trying to figure out how to handle this, but I'm thinking that we would have that Friday have discussions around one of these topics of common interest, one of these goals, and track it like every 10 years, take a close look at each goal and maybe look at some others, who knows, but just get together with just the only purpose being to discuss and to look ahead together and to make sure that we're on track and that we're not missing some things that we ought to be doing right now.
So you feel real good about all of this?
I do, sir. I felt a whole lot more uncertain about 3 years ago as to what we were going to accomplish or if it would be worthwhile. And I've had, just like a parrot, I say enough things enough times or hear enough things said enough times, I start to believe it. And I've heard from everyone who came to the summit and participated in it that it was a great event, that that this was the beginning of a real discussion among a lot of different folks that don't often interact that could really be beneficial. And I don't mind hearing that this might happen. I anticipate that it's going to require me doing things. It's going to require the Federation doing things. It's going to require all of us engaging in things that we may not yet be engaged in, but I'm encouraged. I think it's gone as well as it could up to this point.